This Three Beards Media podcast may contain mature themes, and if you're not down with that, we got three words for you. Like the podcast. Nailed it!
Good evening, everybody. This is False Starts with Bill Blank and Chris Shipley. I'm your host, Chris Shipley. I'm not Bill Blank. Bill Blank is the other gentleman on the line. Bill, how are you doing tonight?
I am swell. I've had a decent. It's been a kind of a manic week. I've had highs, super highs, and super lows. But it's leveled off. It's leveled off. There's a lot of stress since my car wreck, and then, you know, replacing the car. It started out it was going to get fixed, and then as they got into it, they realized it was going to be, they ended up totaling it because, you know, started adding money, and so that sucked because I love that car. So I was kind of happy that it was going to get fixed, but anyway, I'm still fighting with the insurance company. They're trying to lowball me on the value of my car. So, I think a lot of people think that you just have to take what they give you, but you really don't.
Right.
The thing is, I mean, the reason I keep fighting with them, honestly, is because it's just a completely fabricated system that they made up on their own that they're basing the value of your car on.
Yep.
And then they tell you how they're regulated by the state and they're audited and blah, blah, blah. We can't just give you more money without being able to prove it. Well, they can't find a car that's the same year and the same mileage and the same upgrades as my car.
Right.
So they have to make adjustments, right?
Yep.
Well, none of the comparables, they do it like they do with a house. None of the comparables are the same as my car. Like they're all lower as far as like upgrades and all that. They have like lower mileage, but my car has more shit.
Yeah.
So like they make the adjustments for that. Well, the way they make those adjustments are just based on whatever the fuck they want. You know what I mean?
Like, right. Yeah.
They'll tell you, well, this is based on market analysis, market research, and we talk to dealerships and blah, da, 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 da. And it's like, it's fucking bullshit. So you just make up this equation on your own. And they use a third party for that.
Yeah.
And most insurance companies use this third CCC something. And that's who they all use. And, so anyway, I'm trying not to be fucking boring here, but
that's
the bottom line is they try to bully you because they assume that you need that money.
Yep.
To get your next car. So there's only so many days of a rental car you can have. They're going to, you know, right now, like at one point she said to me, I said, well, I'm not going to, she asked if I could go get my stuff out of the old car anytime soon.
Right.
And I was like, well, maybe the end of the day. And she goes, well, okay, so we'll send somebody to grab it tomorrow. And I'm like, well, don't do that. I didn't okay the settlement, you know? Like,
right, yeah.
Well, and she goes, well, we're paying storage on it, though. Okay, well, give me my fucking money. You don't have to pay storage anymore. I mean, there's just no logic to it. And we have to have comp. Well, I send them like five. And then they tell me that it proved that the ones that I send them just prove them right for what they're offering me. And I'm like, yeah, because it's based on an equation you made up on your fucking own.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what I send you to prove it.
Right.
So they're just fucking crooks. So luckily I saved up enough money in my life or whatever that
right.
I could just go buy a new car. So yeah. I keep fighting them because I'm like, fuck you. You're not going to hold me hostage. So I already returned them an old car. I've already bought a new car.
Right.
So I'm just going to sit here until they fucking, do right by me. Like, it's to the point where I actually was going to settle. I was like, just waive the deductible.
Right.
That's $1,000 more. Waive the deductible and I'm good. Well, we can't just waive the deductible. Oh, fuck you. Fuck Farm Bureau. Seriously. If I didn't like my agent, I'd be out, because I have my homeowners too. I've already threatened them. And I haven't been with them long enough. That's the thing. I just went to them like about a year ago. So like, they're going to lose money if I walk.
Here's the thing. The insurance companies, and I realize we're going off on a tangent, but part of this feeds into what
mental health, man. They're fucking with my mental health.
Right. It feeds into what we're going to talk about. But last year I had kind of a similar issue when it came to the homeowners. I had a claim for the roof. I had a claim for the siding. It was a battle to get them to pay for anything. Back and forth. And I don't know shit about that stuff. And you have to find somebody that can navigate that for you, that's doing the work for you and whatever else. And I remember telling my agent, because my agent is like a guy that sells different multiple like insurance companies. So he's like, as soon as we get through all this, you know, we probably need to shop for new insurance.
Yeah.
And then he came back to me. It turns out a lot of these insurance companies aren't writing new policies right now, because they're taking a bath on everything.
Right.
But yeah, that's not my problem. You're the one that chose that. You are in the insurance business.
You gamble. You are in the gambling fucking business, and you lost on my car. You lost on your house. So pay me, motherfucker. You lost. I paid you to assume the risk. That's what insurance is.
Yes. And you lost. I paid the payments.
Yes.
And you would have had no problem canceling me if I didn't make the payments.
100%.
And you had no problems cashing my check every month.
Well, and the thing, and what they hide behind is that what they're doing is the bare minimum. So they're like, we are obligated by the state to give you fair market value. Well, you're deciding what fair market value is.
Right.
No one else, there's no governing body for this. There's no overriding factor that says this is all based on opinion, all of it.
Yeah.
It's just like selling a fucking baseball card. It's only worth $1,000 if somebody's willing to pay $1,000.
Right.
So you're full of fucking shit. And if I can show you a version of my car that has less bells and whistles, but has 50,000 less miles on it, and it's selling for $4,000 more than what I'm wanting for my car, that's a wash. That's a wash. Yeah.
Right.
Like, if I'm asking you for 17 and it's selling for 22, then you should be giving me 17.
Right.
If the only difference is the fucking mileage.
Yeah, no kidding. My dad, I remember him arguing with an insurance company, and he was like, listen, it's not like I'm over here trying to make money on the deal. I just want paid what the car's worth so I can replace it. All I want is replacement value. I'm not trying to make money on it. And he's like, listen, it's not like Principal built that brand new fucking building downtown because you were paying out and people and you were losing money.
Yeah, 100%.
So, you know, cut me my fucking check and quit dicking me around.
That's exactly what I sent him an email yesterday that said, I find it hard to believe that a company whose net assets as of October of last year was 1,200 and some million, 100,000 and fucking 50 cents or some shit.
Right.
Like, kiss my ass. I'm asking you for $1,000 more. Don't fucking tell me you can't find it. We're regulated by the state and we get audited. Oh, fuck off.
Yeah.
Stop insulting my intelligence.
Don't even get me started on life insurance.
But it's like, yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, we're just going to bore the fuck out everybody. But the point is, if you can, you should fight. They're banking on the fact that you don't have any money, that you need
this
new car.
Yeah. And
so they will lowball you every time you turn around. You know, make sure you're taking it to a body shop that you trust.
Yeah.
You know, because like my neighbor is the body guy who I take my car to. He works for Altoona Body Shop, and they're amazing. They're awesome. He's amazing. I mean, he's their body guy. And
right.
He worked on my car, and he's fucking great. And so I trust them. And they tell me the whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me when they got underneath it that they started adding to the estimate. Yeah, because they had approved $13,000 worth of repairs. And so they keep adding to it until it kicks it back, right?
Yep.
And so it kicks it, it kicked it back to them at $19,000.
Right.
So why am I not getting $19,000? Why are you trying to give me $15,900? Fucking suck my dick. Like, they're fucking crooks, dude. And so it's just, for me, it's like a matter of principle right now. I'm just like, I hate bullies. You want my blood to boil? Yep. Fucking bully me. And that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Well, and they think you're stupid. I mean, that's because the majority of the people not are stupid, but they don't know the ins and outs of that industry.
Well, and I don't either, but I just,
and I kind of fell into that. I kind of fell into that with the house, right? With the siding deal. I fought with them for months, and I was probably, it was probably a $6,000 difference between the estimate that they gave me and what anybody would give me as a, as an estimate to fix it. And I finally had gotten so tired of I could never get the rep on the phone, never get an email back. The only time I would ever get a response back is if I called my local agent and said, hey, can you help me here? And then he would do something and I'd get a phone call back. But after a while, I was like, you know what? I've got the extra money. I'll just pay the difference and be done with it, because they wore me down. You know what I mean? And I'm sure that happens to a lot of people. And it is stressful. And it does lead into to what we're talking about tonight.
I mean, it's what it really makes me think about is, like, when it comes to mental, like, what this has done for me, like, daily. It's actually been a positive thing for me, because I was in a position to take care of this myself and be able to say, fuck you. And that feels really good.
Yeah.
And I'm proud of myself for that, you know, what have you. But I was thinking about what this does to people that aren't in my position. Like, what if this was 10 years ago and I still had a family of five in my house?
Mm-hmm.
And these guys weren't going to give me enough money for my car so that I could get something comparable, reliable enough. Right.
Right.
Like, right now, dude, I mean, I'm just fighting over a couple thousand dollars out of principle.
Yeah.
And I'm a guy that there's really only two things that I care about in my life as far as material possessions.
Yeah.
And that's that I like to drive a nice, luxurious car. I like luxury cars, and I like nice, like, big TVs. Like, that's those are, like, the only two things I give a fuck about. I don't care about dressing nice. None of that shit.
That's like, that reminds me of the time I was taking that barbecue grill in a big TV to this function, because we were having a big watch party somewhere, and I stopped in my Dodge Ram pickup and was filling gas up. And this person got out of their car and looked at me, and I was sitting there filling gas up with a big barbecue grill and TV. And they were like, that's kind of an odd combination. I was like, I'm leaving my wife. I took my three favorite possessions.
That was quick.
I know, that's, man. Quick. Sometimes I'm pretty witty.
Good job out of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm just thinking about, like, what it would, what it would do, like, to somebody. And, you know, the biggest thing is, like, I drove what I had to drive for a really long time. Like, especially when I was married, I always drove the shittier car. You know, we always had, like, one new car, and I drove the hand-me-down basically each time we would progress.
Sure.
And so, you know, and I was on the road. I was driving coast to coast for 20 years. So gas mileage was important, you know. So, I mean, I drove a Ford Focus for the longest time. It was a decent one, you know. It was an upper tier Ford Focus. It had leather seats. you know, it got to the point, I got older, and I got to where I had a little bit more money, and I was like, you know, I'm going to start driving what I want.
Right.
Like, I've been driving what I have to drive for so long.
Yeah.
Because of credit, because of all these different reasons, you know. Now I'm in the position where I can just drive what I want, and I don't give a fuck about gas mileage and whatever. So,
right.
I wanted a Chrysler 300 my whole adult life, and so I bought one, and that's what I wrecked, and I was a fucking emotional mess. But the weird thing was, it made me want something different. Like, yeah, I thought I would just go buy another one, but it like made me want something else and maybe even to upgrade a little. I don't know.
Well, it gave you a chance to choose something different. You could choose what you wanted. I mean, that's the whole point of it. It's funny because I kind of went through a similar thing after I got sick with cancer and got through. And then as the kids got older, Stacy and I would have a lot of conversations about, like, we're at a point in our life now where we should be able to enjoy some of the fruits that of our labor. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all, you know, understandable that we're working and we're paying our bills and so on or whatever. But what are we doing it for if we're just sitting here and not enjoying it a little bit? You know what I mean? And
right.
Before I got divorced from Tracy, I had a 2002 Ford Mustang convertible. And I loved that car and had to get rid of it after the divorce and sacrificed a lot when I was a single dad. I mean, I think I was driving a 1979 Chevy Suburban that I paid $1,500 for. I drove that for about a year or so until Stacy and I got married. And then we bought a brand new van that was big enough that we could have six kids. Baby. You know, I know, right? And George is right. We have to stop working to live and just live 100%. But long story short, you know, at that point we had four kids together. We were building our marriage back up. So we did sacrifice a lot of things, you know, and if we bought a new car, it was practical enough to buy, you know, so that all four kids could ride in it and we could go places and things like that. And then once the kids got older, I was like, you know, if I'm being, and I've always said, I want to be brutally honest on this podcast because I think it's important. When I got really sick, I kind of was in like an epiphany of like, you know, what have I kind of done here with my life? Like I should be a lot farther along than I am. Now I preface that by saying I wasn't unhappy with my life and my kids and my wife, but I'm saying material wise a little bit, sometimes I was like,
why don't I have nicer
yet? Yeah, well, you know, I should be a lot farther along than I am. And I struggled with that for quite a while. And that's part of where I think now when I'm to the point where the kids are, you know, Tyler and Caitlin are moved out and the boys are 20, that I'm understanding a healthy balance of that now, right? We take little mini trips and go do stuff or whatever, but we still are home and taking care of our responsibilities and so on. So we have a good balance for that. But we were talking about before we started the podcast about kind of what we wanted to run down and things like that. I had said to you jokingly, I was like, man, yesterday I had therapy and it seemed to come at the right exact time. Mm-hmm. The last few weeks have been really good in my head. And I can't get into too deep of details as far as why, but there's a couple things that I'm kind of waiting on to happen that I've been looking forward to happening and that can change a couple things here with what's going on with my life. And the anticipation of that happening has gotten me into a better mood. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And
something to look, having something to look forward to is kind of what life is all about.
And even over the weekend, like Stacy and I went, I did some running around. I did some fundraising stuff. Stacy and I took a trip down to Winterset to go see Sam Anker at First Down Brewery to talk about a new pod. Which at the end, I'll let you know what that is, Bill, and you're going to absolutely love it and hate it at the same time. So that's a little and then Sunday, we took all the kids to Adventureland and spent the day. It was a great weekend, right? And then yesterday, as I was working, I was anticipating getting an email about this certain aspect. And as the day went on and I continued, I'd get an email in and it wasn't the email I was looking for. I started to get a pit in my stomach of disappointment. Like, what happens if the email comes and it's not the answer that I want? Or what happens if the email doesn't come today and now I have to go through the same thing tomorrow of being sick to my stomach? And I'll read this because it kind of put into how I felt, and I kind of wrote it down. And what I said was, sorry, I got to find it here. So I said, managing expectations is something I need to work on. I need to realize that my expectations of service and timeliness, and among other things, may not be what others are. It's something I'm learning while in therapy to help manage this and not let it affect my mental health and some bouts of depression. When things don't happen the way or when or how I expect them to happen, I either get angry or the disappointment mounts into depression. And I'm sitting here now with a pit in my stomach as I wait for this email, text, or response from something that I'm waiting on. And I feel like I've been like this since ever since I was a little kid. And I feel like it will never go away. And the pending disappointment is worse because I know if that email or text comes and it's a no, I'll be devastated and I'll need to learn to manage that. And I've really come to the epiphany that I have certain expectations of things that probably isn't fair to expect other people to live to those expectations. And when they don't meet those expectations, I either get angry or disappointed or depressed about it. And I'll give you just a quick couple of examples. I'm the kind of person that if you email me or text me or call me or whatever, I acknowledge that right away. Now, this is a very small example, right? Mm-hmm. I acknowledge that right away. It's just my nature. Because in my mind, I'm like, oh, that person's waiting on me and I don't want them to wait on me. So even if I can't fix or do what they want, I can at least acknowledge that I've messaged them, right? Mm. And when people don't do that to me, it gets me, I don't want to say angry, but like I sit here and think.
You feel disrespected.
Hard, yeah. How hard is it to answer somebody back? You know what I mean? And I need to understand that not everybody has the ability to maybe do that all the time. Right.
But like, it's also, if you think about it this way, if you were to think about it, like they are setting a boundary, not necessarily for you, just in general, that says to them, because I think that's something in society now that we've fucked up a little bit, like with text messaging and everything.
Yeah.
Because you know they got that message right now. It's not like back in the day before. I had to get home and listen to the answering machine, and you know what I'm saying?
I've said that before.
What do you think you are that they should have to answer you at your beck and call? You know what I mean?
Right. And I want to make sure anybody that's listening, what I'm referencing as far as this thing goes is not, doesn't have anything to do with any of the people that would even remotely be listening to this podcast.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
It's not.
Yeah. We're talking in generalities here.
Well, the situation that I'm waiting on is real, but
right.
It's not related to anybody that might be listening.
Sure.
To this. So I want to make sure we clear that up.
Right.
But I'm giving examples of,
but the speed at which someone answers.
Right. You know? So the last information that I got from this person was that they had to make that I was in a certain process here and they had a couple other things that they had to take care of next week. And then I would hear, and that was last week. And now I'm sitting here every day now going, where's this email? Where's this at? And it could be perfectly good reasons why I haven't gotten an email back. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe somebody has a sick grandma and they've now went on PTO or something else has happened and they have to put this on hold. But it's so hard for me to not put people, my dad really messed me up. I told this to my therapist yesterday. My dad used to have a saying that he would say, I'll never serve you a meal at a restaurant that I wouldn't be willing to eat myself. And I used to think when I was a kid, man, what a great attitude to have. No, that has completely fucked me up. Because I extrapolate that to every single thing in my mind. Even sometimes when one of the boys will come downstairs and they might say something and I'll be like, hey, do you realize that if I'd have said that to my dad, I'd have got my ass kicked? Like, don't talk to me that way or whatever.
Yeah.
But in reality, I'll look back and go, Jesus, maybe they were just having a joke with me and I took it wrong. You know what I mean? I'm really, really struggling with managing, and I've told my wife and I've told the that my kids, I'm trying to work on
managing
those expectations so that even though my expectations are clear up here, and that doesn't mean that they're better, not everybody's is there. And I can't get angry just because everybody doesn't do it the same way that I do it.
Yeah. And we brought this up. We talked about this last week, I'm pretty sure. And I believe that I said this, but, and this is something that stand-up comedy did for me, going through, but I've found expectations. I've said it many times. Expectations are the enemy of peace. Like a great example is when we were, at Hinterland a few weeks ago when I wrecked, it was obviously before I wrecked my car, but Friday night, we were talking about this, that, and the other thing, and a couple things didn't go as planned, but it's an outdoor music festival and there's other people involved. There's people that fly by the seat of their pants. There's people that are super organized, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, somebody was getting upset about something not going the right way. And I just said to him, I was like, in these situations, like expectations are the enemy of peace. Like you need to not have expectations. You need to be able to roll with it, with whatever's going on. It's got to be adaptable. Like you can't. And that's, I came to that with stand-up because I learned very quickly that you never know how the show is going to go before the show. Like there's ways you can kind of tell, like a lot of times the energy's right. You can sense the energy in the room and you can kind of tell it's going to be a good show, but there's been times where you felt that way and then you were wrong. And when you were wrong, it was very disappointing, or you expected the show to suck really bad and it ended up being okay or great. You know, maybe there wasn't a lot of people there, so you're like, oh, this is going to suck. But if you assume it's going to suck, sometimes you do suck because you go up there with shitty energy and whatever else, you know?
Yeah.
So I just decided I was never going to go into a show expecting anything out of anybody except myself. You know, I had my performance and I was never going to go into it expecting the crowd to behave a certain way or, you know, this is going to be a great show because of A, B, and C. Well, could be a suck job because of A, B, and C too, you know? Yeah, the higher expectation, the greater the chance for resentment. And, you know, it's just hard. I think all of these situations are hard because there's a happy medium. You don't want to go through life with zero expectations,
right,
of yourself or your kids or anything like that. You know, you don't want to go through life like that, but you also don't want the expectations to rob you of happiness.
Right. You know, when I was one of the first meetings I had with my therapist, he asked me a bunch of questions. And one of the questions he asked me was, he said, are you the kind of guy that is okay with spur of the moment plans and go with the flow? And I literally, the way I answered that was, as long as I know that's what we're going to do.
That reminds me of a story.
It's such a shitty answer, right?
Yeah.
Because I'm like, well, let me explain. If we're going into the weekend and we're gonna go to go see my father-in-law in Harlan, and I say to Stace, what time do you want to leave? And she goes, well, I'm trying to leave by 10 o'clock. Okay, in my head, we're leaving at 10.
Yeah.
And it might be 9:45 and we're still doing stuff around the house and I'm getting anxious. Right. And I'm like, and I'm like, I thought we were leaving at 10. And I will sometimes be short with her or them. And she'll be like, well, it's not a big deal. We can leave at 10:30. And that's where I learned why I say that's not her fault. I shouldn't be mad at her because we're not leaving at 10. I need to learn that. Not to be so damn rigid that when you say maybe 10 o'clock, that it has to be right at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Whereas if she would have said, you know what, I don't know, let's just leave sometime in the morning and we'll figure it out. then okay, now we're not planning. We're planning some spontaneity, right?
Yeah, like she had to say 10 o'clock to get you to shut the fuck up.
Right, probably. Yeah. But if she would have said, I don't know, let's leave whenever, sometime in the morning.
Right.
Then in my head, okay, we don't have a set time that we have to leave, so now I'm not anxious. And That's what I mean when I say, yeah, I'm good with spontaneity as long as it's not,
yeah,
as long as it's planned.
But you're still explaining away the same thing, yeah.
Right. So those are the expectations that I have. So when I then get angry or get irritated, that's on me because I'm putting an expectation on something that shouldn't be there, and those are the things that I need to learn to work on. And then I think those things will then in turn make me be able to or help me.
Well, you'll find that you're happier if you can just let go of some of that shit.
Right.
I mean,
yes,
it's been an enemy. It hasn't helped you. When the fuck has it ever helped you? It's never helped you.
The only time, it doesn't help me at work either. Right.
I mean, there's certain things you got to be on time for.
Yes.
You know, if you're expected to be somewhere on time for something, then of course you get a little anxious, and it should be that way, because if you're not on time, you're disrespecting whoever's expecting you, right?
Right. Yep.
But outside of that, when you can just kind of improv it, you know,
right,
you're robbing yourself of peace.
I had, when I was off work and I was going through interviews, one of the questions that they would always ask me is, you know, tell me about a typical day or how you do things. And how I work on certain things is I am so structured with stuff on how I do my job that I will tend to be the kind of person that maps out what needs to be done so that, and get that done early, so that I almost have to pad my schedule with some free time, as bad as this sounds. So that in case something doesn't go right, I don't freak out and I have time to deal with it. That's how I manage my day in everything that I do. That's why a lot of times when, like, if we have a bunch of stuff to do around the house on a weekend, okay, I'm going to bust all this out in the morning so that I have the rest of the day. I can do whatever the fuck I want. But don't come to me at 3:30 in the afternoon and then all of a sudden give me a new task, because no, we should have done it in the morning so I could have the rest of the afternoon to myself. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's nothing wrong with that.
No, but there's got to be a happy medium. That's where I'm struggling.
Yeah, I mean, you want to get stuff done, but I mean, you and I are exact opposites in that way. I'm a very fly by the seat of my pants person. Like I drive my girlfriend nuts. She hates it. She hates going to the grocery store with me because I never have a list or a plan. I just fucking walk around the grocery store.
Oh, yeah. See, I can't do that.
Yeah. She look at, I can see the anxiety building in your face as I describe it.
Holy
shit. You need to smoke pot. You need to smoke weed. There is nothing fucking more satisfying than walking through a grocery store with money in your pocket.
I already eat too much.
But no, the point is though, like I need more structure. I'm a person that would benefit from more organization, better planning. My stand-up career would have been a lot better if up until this point had I been more scientific up to this point, you know,
right,
more regimented. But I don't operate that way, and that's why stand-up's the perfect career for me, because it's an individualized sport, so to speak.
Right.
Whatever works for you, works for you. Whatever makes you funny, makes you funny. There's no fucking class. There's no benchmark. There's no union dues to pay. It's just, you know, it's whatever. So those are the environments I thrive in. I'm also very good under pressure because I don't feel... I think most of the time that I don't feel, the reason I don't feel pressure when most people do is because I don't care enough about whatever it is.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be making me feel pressure, you know, like day job shit. You know, I remember every day job I ever had, when it got busy, everybody's fucking flipping out and I'm still doing the same fucking speed, same, you know, I could step, I would step it up, you know, I could step it up a notch when it was busy, you know, to the flow, but, but like, I wasn't going to freak out. I wasn't going to let that shit bother me. Fuck that.
And I'm I'm such a black and white hard line. These are the way you should do things that sometimes I struggle with
nuance,
with nuances and things and in life. All right, let's take a break and then we'll come back and we'll talk about the other thing that we talked about. So what I just talked about, I felt like internally I've looked at the things that I need to change. But earlier before we went on, we talked about those people that tend not to do that. So let's talk about that when we come back. And we're going to listen to a break from our sponsor, Revelton.
At Revelton Distilling Company, everyone has become a part of the Revelton family. From the tailors and their daughter who helped perfect their award-winning gins, to the team who installed Lucy, our 33-foot-tall custom-made still, right down to the local farms that provide our coveted corn, and even the cows on those farms who consume our mash byproduct. Want to see the farm to flask come to life? Now you can tour Lucy and find out where we take Iowa's harvest and transform it into our finest spirits. Choose between a 45-minute tour or find out even more by scheduling a VIP behind-the-scenes tour to get the taste of the full Revelton experience. You can visit them at 1400 West Clay Street in Osceola, Iowa, or find all of Revelton's award-winning spirits at any local grocery or spirits retailer.
Awesome. Great sponsor. They are so supportive of us. So go down and check those guys out. Bourbon, I think, is going to be released in December. So they've got some cool stuff coming. So
nice.
You know what, Bill, before we get into this other topic, I teased a little bit about this new pod that I think that you're going to hate and love. So
there's not a fucking referee in it, is there?
So I went down to First Down Brewery, which is owned by Sam Anker. They, in collab, did the Legend beer for Jack Trice's foundation. So, and you can get that at First Down. You can get that at pretty much any local retailer, and they did it in with Peachtree. So we went down there. He reached out to me because him and two other guys are high school basketball referees.
Oh, fuck.
And they pitched the idea of doing a referee type pod where they talk about their road trips and the silly shit that they do on their road trips and coaches and the craziest coaches that they've dealt with and players and just stories.
Are they going to admit to being like assholes and doing like holding personal grudges and making,
from what I'm aware on that, from what I've been told, to I don't think so. Oh. But you are going to absolutely love their logo, which is this.
Three blind ref.
So we are in early stages of getting ready to launch three blind refs.
Yeah, the outfits are perfect. The road. Fucking Tweedledum and Tweedledummer and Tweedledummer.
And for those of you that don't know, Sam played football for Iowa State for Paul Rhodes in the early 2010s, 2011. So, but he's got a nice little brewery down there in Winterset called First Down Brewery. Stacy and I went down there and talked to him and had a couple of beers. So when you get a chance, if you ever go down there, check those guys out. But they will be launching probably right around basketball season. So super cool. And I did tell them about you, Bill.
Yeah.
And I think you might have an open invitation. Come on. So
They'll just get mad.
Right.
It'll be too confrontational. I'll be like, you guys are horrible humans. Like, they're not gonna nobody's gonna respond positively to that.
Yeah, no. You don't know. They might. Not everybody's
They're gonna go, yeah. We got into this because we're total douchebags. They're never gonna say that.
Not everybody's as toxic as you are.
Yeah, that's what it is.
So
we'll go ahead and do it, and I'll be the talking person.
You'll be the talking person.
Yeah. Good transition.
Yeah, nice there you transition, go. Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, we are professionals around here.
Yeah, you great job. So you're here to keep the train on the rails.
That's right. Yes.
You're here to fucking dangle a carrot in front of me and make me go squirrel down. and then rein me back in.
Well, I'll tell you what, there'll be no reins on you in a week or so. I think we're gonna have a very large Three Beards Media Psyhawk pod
where
we're gonna have one person from every pod on together talking Psyhawk rivalry.
That'll be fun.
So I assume that you're going to be good to be on that.
I definitely will. That'll be a blast.
Yeah. So look for that. I think it's probably going to be middle of next week. So, okay. Yeah. Again, before we started recording, we were kind of going down a rundown or whatever. And I talked to Bill about the girls on Hot Mess Happy Hour had talked about sometimes having people in your life and you just have to like put them outside of your life, right? Like they're not good to be around. And even if that means a family member, and Holly was talking about how she doesn't talk to her mom anymore. She doesn't have anything to do with her and how important it was to have an outlet to be able to not have toxic people in your life. And I was talking to somebody else who's in my family that kind of has a similar situation going on with somebody. And I sent it to that person and was like, you need to listen to this, because what you're struggling with as far as whether or not you did the right thing by blocking that person should help validate that. So we were talking about that beforehand. And then you brought up a really good point that, you know, have we gone too far sometimes with those terms of a toxic person?
Yeah.
It's a narcissist and so on.
I think those terms are getting overly used now, and people are, it's the pendulum has swung, you know. Those were traits and those were terms that we didn't recognize for a long time and that we didn't really understand. And now I feel like the pendulum has swung to where people are very quickly labeling people with those terms and using them like, sometimes they necessarily don't apply, you know, and it's just because of, I mean, you just see it in media and television and podcasts and stuff. Like the word narcissist has been used. I bet someone says that word 1,000 times a day on TV. Like if you were to just let one channel play all day, I bet you would hear it 100 times throughout whatever's programming is on throughout that. You know, it's always applied when you're watching, everybody loves to watch the murder shows now. Everything's a murder show. I mean, you know, it seems to be a heavily female thing too. You know, they'll have the t-shirts. It's like wine, chocolate and murder shows. And there's like a ponytail or some shit, you know, like I'm just saying. And so on all the murder shows, you know, the murderer was a violent narcissist or a sociopath, or, you know, it's, you know, the definition of a sociopath, someone that lacks complete empathy, you know, a narcissist, no empathy at all. They fake empathy.
Yep.
Like, you know how many times I've been called a narcissist by like my ex-wife or somebody else. And, I'm an easy target for that because I do stand up and that makes me the center of attention. And I somehow crave that. That makes me a narcissist.
Well, yeah,
I fucking have bawled my eyes out publicly about people that I love or people that I'm sad about. That narcissist can't do that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So some of that's in the eye of the beholder, and some, you know, I feel like when people use those labels on people, a lot of times they do it to avoid focusing inward, because no one ever says, when you're talking about a toxic relationship, no one ever says that they're toxic. It's the other person that's toxic.
Yeah.
Nobody ever says that they're the one that's toxic. I think that maybe sometimes two personalities can be toxic to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And in that in those individualized cases, that's a toxic relationship, because somehow you guys clash to where you're toxic to each other.
Right.
But it's not always this person over here is toxic and you're this fucking angel.
Yeah. You know? I haven't been called a narcissist before. But I do sometimes get from people, like when they feel like they want to take a shot at me, they'll take a shot of this, like this podcast, or, well, why don't you go talk about it on your podcast? Or why don't you, I get that a lot, which I think
is, 'cause that means that you want attention, right?
Right. Yeah. So I think that that's their way of saying that, that I'm a narcissist or whatever. And I always seem to come back and go, if that's the best insult that you have for me, then I can pretty much lay my head down at night and not feel bad.
Yeah.
Like, but I think the other term that people use a lot is gaslighting.
Yes. Yes.
They use that a ton. And I'm not entirely sure everybody even knows what that means.
Right. Yeah.
You know,
I didn't really know what it meant for a long time until I was describing the shit that my ex-wife was saying to me. And somebody's like, yeah, she's gaslighting you. And I'm like, what? Yeah. And then I looked at her like, oh yeah, that's exactly it.
Right.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
You know, so
100%.
Yeah. And you're right that because you can use the term gaslighting now to avoid taking responsibility
for
your own behavior, your own reaction, whatever that might be.
Right.
And then, you know, someone will blame you for your reaction by calling you a narcissist or sociopath.
Yeah.
We're going in this circle, you know? And
right.
What I really feel is that relationships with parents are very complicated. They never want to stop parenting you. Even if they sucked at it, you know, I've known a lot of people in my life where, they had shitty childhoods and their parents weren't around, weren't active, you name it, fucked them up, however, right?
Yeah.
Yet they still want to now later in life give them advice and yada, yada, yada. And of course they're thinking to themselves, well, fuck you for trying to give me advice now, you know?
Right.
All that kind of shit. And then there's parents that were great and they still try to be great. And they can't be. They need to let you go a little bit, you know? And so I think with parents, the best thing we can do for ourselves, for our own peace of mind, our own mental health, is to understand that most of them did the absolute best they could with the tools they had at the time. They just didn't have, most of their failures were a result of them just not having the tools.
I would say that's 100% accurate.
It's not always an innocent thing that they didn't have those tools. You know, sometimes they should have done some fucking work and they didn't do it.
And that's the key. I don't necessarily think that gets them off the hook.
No,
not at all. And I don't think that's what you're saying.
Right.
And I will say that when you're with a person though, that it's hard to explain what I want to say here, but if that person is married to somebody else, that I think at some point it's understandable when they're together and that person is like that at the beginning, mm-hmm. but you would think that they would start to evolve. And after X number of years, they don't necessarily evolve and it's always somebody else's fault. That's where I think the patience level is like, okay, you had this aspect at the beginning and I sympathize and understand that. But we are now 30 years down the road and you have not adapted or changed. That's a problem.
Well, if any relationship whatsoever with this person disturbs your peace, then it's okay to walk away, I think, no matter what. You know, mm-hmm. I don't think that you have to go, well, that's my mom.
Right.
You know, but.
Right.
But then at the same time, I think that because that's your mom, maybe there's a little more leeway. Maybe mom gets a few extra chances that most people don't.
It's
much easier to walk away from just a shitty, like, kind of one-sided friendship or different right. relationships. It's pretty hard when it's family. It's much harder.
It is harder, but I think that when you're at that point when it's family, I think sometimes maybe it's like, okay, this really does need to be done.
Yeah.
Holly's point on the podcast, and she had said it perfectly, because it just so happens when she said it on the podcast, it was, I just gotten a message from the other person that I'm referencing that mm-hmm. had said that somebody in their family had posted this exact same thing. And it was this whole thing about, you know, your mom's not going to be here for very much longer. So, you know, I don't have my mom anymore. So make sure that you latch onto her and you talk to her every day, no matter what. Okay. Well, but you don't know.
Like, she might not deserve that.
Holly's point is you post that, but you don't know what my side of the story is and what I went through and the reason why I'm so, I mean, if you are at that point with a mom or a dad,
sure.
If you're that far to that point where you can't be around them anymore,
mm-hmm.
it's probably a pretty good reason, because those are the two people that you would be the hardest to separate from. You know what right. I mean?
Well, my, I can tell you kind of a personal story that
my cousin Scott's right on the, sometimes you have to love.
Yeah, people that's 100%. A good way to put it. You know, you don't not show up at the family reunion, but maybe you just kind of, hey, how you doing?
Right.
You know, but,
and I've said before, I can love somebody that's in my family and have love for them. But also if they weren't in my family, I probably wouldn't be friends with them, because I don't have anything in common with them and I don't particularly care for them.
Right. Right. Yeah. You know?
But that doesn't
a lot of that comes
had to happen, and I love them.
Yeah, a lot of that comes with distant relatives and stuff, and you know, it's a little bit different. But
right,
like I can give you an example. You know, when my son was young, we've talked before about getting your parenting parented.
Yep.
You know, yep. And how annoying that is, and how the parents tend to not want to respect your boundaries, and yada yada yada.
Yep.
You know, my parents watched my son after school. My mom watched my son after school and was like his daycare. So she obviously thought she could take more liberties, you know, for that reason.
Right.
You know, free daycare, you know.
Yep.
And that was one of my biggest battles. It was like, just because I'm not paying you for daycare doesn't mean that you get to be his parent. Like, right. You know, you don't have to follow my rules or expectations for my kid. Yep.
Right.
But anyway, you know, I was going through the divorce with his mom. There were different, you know, his mom would obviously get into my mom's ear. She'd be picking him up and she'd be telling, you know, and this was before he was in school. It was when he was younger, but
sure. Yeah,
you know, I was this piece of shit, you know, all the time. Because I didn't tell anybody anything. I was just quietly going through everything. And she'd, of course, well, he's this, he's that, you know. And over the years at different times, you know, she would just try to be, his mom wanted to be the favorite parent, wanted to be mm-hmm. in charge. And she would use my son to control my behavior,
yep.
you know, to try to control me.
Right.
And like at one point when I was about to get remarried, I moved four houses down from my parents. So my son would go to my parents' house four houses down after school. My stepkids were also going to the same elementary school. And so my son, when we first moved in, wanted to come to my house every day and play with the other two kids and whatever. Right.
Right.
Well, after about 3 days of that, his mom said that he had to stay at my mom's house. He couldn't come to my house. She needed to know where he was all the time. Well, he's either there or four houses down.
Right.
You really need to know. Like,
yeah.
You know, so like, so that all starts, right? So then it got to the point where I'm going, I would go pick my stepkids up after school and have to watch someone else pick my son up. Mm-hmm. I couldn't just pick up all three of them, take them back to my house. They play till whenever, right? Sure. And of course, her excuse was that I could try to get pay less child support if I did that every day.
Right. Because and, it was about money for you, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right.
And so one day my mom sent some neighbor lady to pick my kid up. And I wasn't letting that shit happen. I was like, nope, turn your ass around, get in your car. You're not picking up my son. Your mom told me, I don't give a fuck.
Right. Yeah.
What my mom told you. He's my kid. If you don't want me, if you want a scene to be created, stand here. Stay here. I dare you. Like, yeah. So, long story short, you know, I get my kid. So, I was to the point with my mom right there. Like, her loyalty was fucked up.
Yeah. And
she was doing what she was being manipulated by my son's mom because my son was like her whole world at that point.
Right.
And she knew that my ex was. That my son's mom was the type of person that would take him away from her if she didn't right. do what she wanted. And at the time, I'm at odds. You know, I was ready to write everybody off, walk away.
Sure.
You know?
Yep.
But upon reflection and just sitting back, you know, and thinking mostly about my son, you know,
right.
how important that relationship was to him.
Yeah.
And all those different things, you know, it, I just kind of wrote it out and it came around, you know, my relationship with my parents and my, especially like my stepmom now, like my relationship with all of them is 100 times better in the last few years.
Yeah.
And all that came because I didn't give up.
Right.
And had I given up, I probably wouldn't talk to any of them because I don't think any of them would have made the effort, which if you think about sucks.
Right.
But sometimes, I don't know, sometimes you do have to be the one, you know, and I don't regret that I was the one. It was some hard times. It was tough to go through, but in the end, I'm glad that I didn't just write everybody off because. Sure.
And that was an emotional time too, yeah. right?
Like, well, right. Well, and at the emotion
going on.
Also like at the that, end of yeah. the day. Also, at the end of the day, everyone in my family would be there at the drop of a dime. If we were fighting like cats and dogs, if there was a tragedy, they would sure. be there.
Right.
You know, so when I know that, and there's no doubt in my mind, I know that, I try to work things out. You know, but then again, I guess when you know that, the relationship's not really toxic, is it?
No. Although I think that there's, I think that there's still an inherent, if the only time that you can come together is when there's tragedy.
Yeah. Sometimes you're, it makes it seem like they're just a drama queen or whatever.
Right. Or right. If you can't, if that's the only time you can come together and listen, this is no secret. I mean, I'm not breaking any family secrets here. I don't know that my three sisters have ever had a long-term period where one of them wasn't mad at the other one. You know what I mean?
I know exactly.
And when there is tragedy, whatever, they come together or whatever, but somewhere along, and I'm not blaming any one of them. I'm just saying sure. for whatever reason,
something during that tragedy made them start fighting again. Maybe.
And I've been part of that weird dynamic too, right? There's been times where one sister hasn't talked to me. I haven't talked to two sisters. I, you know, and I'm not entirely sure why, cause I'm a fucking delight. Everybody.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't quite understand that, but, I think that's more of a norm than a lot of times. So, which is, you know, part of what we're talking about and trying to work through or whatever. But the bottom line is I think for your mental health and happiness, if you are at a point where you feel like you need to block somebody out of your life just because of their family, I think that's okay. Yeah. I think that that's okay, because at the bottom line, you have to take care of yourself and your family and make and what's right for your family.
Here's a great segue.
My cousin Scott, who had made this comment, lives in Omaha. His mom was my Aunt Joyce. I have an Aunt Lana that lived out there, an Uncle Ron. And there are several cousins and several aunts and uncles and so on that live in the Omaha area that I know of and have love for them, but I don't know them as well as I would like, because for the longest time, my dad didn't talk to some of those guys for whatever reason. And all of us cousins will come now and say, we missed out on a lot. You know, I'll hear my cousin Melissa talk about Friday nights when they all used to go to her house and my aunt would make pizza and things like that. And I would sit here and go, man, that sounds like a really wonderful memory. Mm-hmm. But I never got to experience that because my dad and her dad seemed to be arguing all the time. And now I see my sisters do it sometimes, and I do it with some of my sisters, and it's kind of hard to see, but I don't know for whatever reason why that happened, but I can also see reasons why people do it too. And that's just being honest, you know.
Well, some of it's, you know, the bigger the family, the harder it is for all of them to get along all the time anyway, you know?
Right. Yeah.
I have an older sister and a little brother that I basically grew up with in the same house mostly.
Yeah.
And then I have a little sister that's from my dad and my stepmom, you know, that grew up at my dad's house. When I was at my dad's house, I was with her. And then I have a stepsister that my stepdad brought into the marriage with my mom.
Right.
And my older sister is kind of the matriarch of the family in a way. Like my mom's never been that go-getter, plan shit type person. She's more like me in that regard. I'm a lot more I'm a lot more active, spontaneous, wanting to go have a good time than my mom, you know.
Right.
But like
your mom has to plan her spontaneity. Is that
right? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. She's not good at sticking to plans. But my sister, you know, in that regard, my sister has kind of mommed all of us.
Yeah.
Over the years, you know.
Sure.
And my younger siblings more so than me. But my little brother and my little sister, she has definitely mothered them in a lot of ways. And myself, I mean, there's, you know, she just springs into action. And so for that reason, I guess we all get along great. We have our different little things that we'll bitch about, you know, about whatever.
Yeah.
I'm sure my brother bitches about me to my sister.
Sure.
I bitch about my brother to my sister. She probably bitches about she'll bitch about one of us to the other one or whatever. Yeah. But when we're all together, when, you know, everybody's together, very rarely is anybody mad at anybody. And I think a lot of that has to do with her being kind of the matriarch, I think. Even though sometimes it could be annoying. It's been annoying at different times over the years, because it's sometimes you're like, dude, you're not my fucking mom, you know?
Right.
But but for the most part, it's all been positive. And the thing is, right or wrong, it all comes from the place of love when it comes to my sister. There's just no doubt about it. So Yeah, I mean, I just don't have those. But as kids growing up, we fought like fucking crazy. I mean, my sister and I had some epic, like, because she was 4 years older than me, 3 years older than me. And I was a really, I was a runt. Like, I was tiny until my junior year of high school.
Yeah.
And so, like, she would beat the piss out of me. Like, she just hold me down, like, do the spit thing. Like, I mean, just make me go absolutely fucking berserk. We basically fought until I could win. Like, my freshman, she was a senior when I was a freshman. And my freshman year, I punched her in the face. And from that point on,
that was the end of it.
That was it. We never fought again.
I had a sister that was like that. She would constantly beat on me until I finally got big enough that I fought back. And that was the end of that.
Yeah. My dad, well, I would fight back. She would, she would just, you know, hold me down. You know, she would do the shit. And then once I lost my shit, she'd run away. And she had a hole. She had a literal hole in her bedroom door. Well, it didn't for years because she tortured me and I lost my shit. She took off running and I was chasing her with a baseball bat and she shut the door just in time. I was going to hit her in the head. I wasn't hesitating. Like I was trying to kill her. And so that happened, and then there was a time where my dad separated us, and he put us on, we're each on each end of the couch.
Yeah.
And I just kind of waited and waited and waited, and when she wasn't paying attention, I just stood up and fucking kicked her in the face, like, just yak as hard as I could. And she and my dad had always told her, like, one of these days, you know, and that day, she'd been torturing me and he knew it. And when I kicked her, literally all he did was go, "Oh." It was almost in the back of his head. He was like, "Finally, fuck."
Right? About time. I was tired of watching you get your ass kicked.
Yeah, for real. I was tired of watching you get beat up by a girl, you fucking pussy.
My cousin Scott, I have friends closer than my own relatives. I just have more in common with my brothers from other mothers. No kidding.
Well, I mean, sure. I've got a friend group that were my best. They've been my best friends since school age. I mean, I've got friends 30 plus years and we still get together all the time. Like, those are all the guys that come over on Sundays. Those are the guys I tailgate with. You know, growing up, my parents weren't fans of them. Really, for the most part. But now my parents adore my friends. They think they're the greatest, and it's loyalty. It's just and that's where the word toxic can, I think, override things sometimes, because loyalty is a trait that's very important to me. And my loyalty to my family and friends could possibly get me in trouble a time or two. But I don't regret a single decision that I've ever made out of loyalty to my friends or family.
Well, I think that's great.
Like, at the end of the day, you know,
right?
Maybe a time or two in a moment, but you know, when you look back and reflect, it was still the right thing to do.
Right. I've said the same thing, and I have, as a matter of fact, Friday night, I had a fantasy football league draft, and the guys that came over, one of them I've been friends with since for probably 35 years, longer than that, probably 40. And don't see him very often, because our lives are just busy or whatever, but no doubt in my mind that if I needed something and I texted him, he'd be there in a half an hour.
Sure.
That's just the way he is. And would trust him more than I would some family, just because of who he is. So, you know, speaking of family, I'm going to pivot real quick here. Every other Sunday, Caitlin and I do a podcast called Like Father, Like Daughter. And, you know, part of what that podcast is we talk about family so that she can learn some of her family history, whether it's through relatives or stories or whatever. And I want to make sure I let other listeners know that this coming Sunday at 7 o'clock, I think, is when I have it scheduled. We are going to have my cousin Pat on, who is Scott's older brother. Pat is suffering from a rare blood disease called amyloidosis. And it's a disease that goes undetected in early stages. He's also suffering from brain cancer. So we're going to bring Pat on so that we can talk to Pat about some of the challenges that he's going through and stuff like that. They are having a benefit for him in Omaha, actually in Council Bluffs on November 4th that we're going to talk about. So if there's anybody out there that would like to tune in and kind of listen, we're going to talk to Pat, hear his story, and it's just an opportunity to kind of get the word out for him and for his benefit. So I hope that people tune in for that. So, and that'll be right here on the same Three Beards Facebook page and YouTube channel and audio feeds. So, Bill, let's wrap up. How excited are you for Saturday? Are you going to the game? Let me ask you, I'll ask this question. Are you more excited for Saturday, or were you more excited Friday when you found out the Cowboys traded for Trey Lance?
Definitely the Trey Lance trade. Could not sleep.
Are you serious? I was not.
No, fuck.
I had no way I would have thought that.
No, fuck no. I do not give a shit about what the Cowboys are doing right now. I'm super excited for Saturday. I hope that we at least get a glimpse of Cade McNamara. Not so much that I just want to see if he's any good. It's just that I don't want him to play Iowa State having not played yet.
I think that's the biggest thing.
I just want to make sure he gets some snaps.
Sure.
Get some looks, gets out of it healthy, you know. Just makes him play. I mean, if nothing else, you know, maybe our offensive line really made some strides and all we have to do is run the ball the whole fucking game. I don't know. Just maybe. Have him out there, have him under center, you know. Yeah. But I'm just, you know, I get so excited every year for football season, and my excitement has nothing to do with how good or bad they're going to be.
I'm the same way.
My excitement is just for football.
Yes.
My friends, tailgating. Yes. It's my favorite time of year. It's my favorite thing to do.
I'm the same way.
So I'm ecstatic. I don't care. I don't care if the expectation was for them to go 0-12. I would still be there with my friends, and I would still be having the time of my life every weekend. And that's why I've turned the other. I mean, I've kind of turned over a new leaf, like I was talking to Jordan about last time. I'm not critical of these players really anymore, like I used to be. Now it's like they're responsible for some of the most joy I've experienced and still experience in my life.
Yep.
So it's like it's that sacred cow thing, you know. When you ask. Yeah. If you ask people in India why cows are sacred, they say because they give you butter, they give you milk, they give you all these wonderful things. Why would you kill that animal?
Right.
So it's kind of like, well, why would I kill my own cow, man?
I'm the same way. I told Stacey this the other day. I was like, I think as weird as this might sound, my moods and disposition might be a little better because I have things that I really enjoy coming up, going to football games, going to tailgates, being with my friends, hanging out with my friends on away games and getting together in the garage and watching a garage party or whatever. As crazy as it sounds, I've got this basement down here that I've set up, and I've got a new couch down here, and I've got three TVs and Sunday Ticket, and to be able to watch three games and be in my element and be down here all day. I'm super excited for it. It makes me happy. It's, you know, 17, 18, 20 weeks out of the year.
Right.
It helps me. It just
gives
me
half the year.
Right. So with that, good luck to your Hawks. Next week we will hate each other again for a week. And that's just fine.
All right. I wish I was as good a person as you, because I'm.
I know you don't.
I'm rooting for you and I.
I know you are.
The Panthers.
I know you are. You're a big Panthers fan. You're big Panthers.
My whole life, I've always been a big you and I guy. It's the Hawks and then you and I. I listen to all the you and I podcasts. They got a podcast called High School Walk-Ons that I listen to. And
how to be a high school walk-on and turn around and be a Division I football team all in 3 years.
How to make it from Waterboy at the 8-man school to a starter. No, I do have the Allen boys all played at UNI, and they're close. They're people that I love. So I have rooted for UNI over the years, but not that drastic.
That's right. All right.
All right, man. Peace, everybody.
I appreciate it. Scott's talking trash. Both your teams are trailing my Huskers. We already had a player arrested before the first game. That's right. Yeah. I think he was stealing vape pins, something, wasn't he? Or he got busted.
Jesus.
With vape
pins. Yep. Matt Rhule. Yeah, he hasn't missed a beat, has he?
Yeah. No. Nope.
Jesus.
Does he realize that that's not Baylor?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
there's not going to be anybody in the know. People that are in the know are not going to be able to put a stop to this.
Robbed a store.
Yeah, he robbed a vape store.
Well, you know what?
Or a tobacco.
Listen,
store.
Sam Mack robbed a Burger King in Ames when he was a starting basketball player for Iowa State, and his picture was in the actual fucking restaurant that he robbed. So, you know, not everybody can be Sam Mack esque.
Famous. Yeah. And then you got
Sam Mack.
Then you got your Kenny Pratt situation. That was a good one.
Well, in Kenny Pratt's defense, that was after he was in Iowa State. He was playing for the Iowa Energy, I believe.
That's true.
Got arrested on the court.
Yeah. And then ran through the parking. That was at Dowling. I remember I remember news footage of him running through the parking lot at Dowling. And then who was the other guy? There was somebody else did something at Iowa. What was the other guy?
There was a third guy. We could get into the Paul Pierce discussion, but we ain't got all night. So
that's Pierre Pierce.
Whatever. It's the same.
And I'm sorry, but I am in the know on that. Did Blaze Bryant do something bad?
No, Blaze Bryant is a mortgage broker in Texas. I talked to him last week about coming on the side of the storm.
Nice. I remember that name.
He had some elite hair. He had the coolest flat
I just remember
top ever.
Yes, because the reason I remember him is because they were all talking about how great he was, and then we beat the piss out of him. It was one of those, like, they were always it was back when Iowa just beat the piss out of him every game, pretty much. Like, even if the score was close, it was still dominated.
Yeah, it was not
I just remember going into the game, like, Blaze Bryant. And they were like, oh, Blaze Bryant. And I think he averaged about fucking 2.5 yards a carry or something. I don't remember, remember we pounded him and it was hilarious.
All right. I don't want to talk about this anymore. All right. So we'll see everybody in 2 weeks. Make sure you check out our previous pod with Jordan. That's doing really good numbers.
Yeah, that was a great one.
We appreciate you guys.
Evidently they played it in Iowa City on the radio.
Dude, I cannot find out who that is. No, everybody denies it. Sons of bitches. At least give us credit.
It must have just been a clip.
Must have been.
You know?
Hey, we're getting famous. What can I say?
Whatever.
All right. Bill, you have a great 2 weeks.
Have a great
weekend in Iowa City. Have a good time. Stay safe.
Yeah, let me know when we're doing that pod next week.
It will. It'll be next week. All right, guys.
All right, brother.
Everybody have a great night. Thanks.